From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Ex-House Speaker Mike Madigan's former top aide, Tim Mapes, has been indicted, accused of lying to a federal grand jury and obstructing an investigation. Mapes had been called to testify to that grand jury. The grand jury was investigating efforts by Madigan and someone working on his behalf to obtain private jobs, contracts, and payments in order to influence and reward Madigan. Mapes had been granted immunity for his testimony, meaning nothing he said could be used in a criminal case against him, unless he made a false statement or committed perjury. In response to the indictment, he says he testified truthfully.
Well, Tim Mapes was the right-hand man for Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Madigan's set to go on trial next year. Mapes is headed to the courtroom next week, and we'll preview what's coming up there in court. That and more on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Charlie Wheeler is on vacation this week. Joining us, we have Hannah Meisel with Capital News Illinois. And Hannah, it's always good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Also, we have Ray Long, reporter for the Chicago Tribune. And it's always good to speak with you as well, Ray.
Always good to be here, sir.
Ray, I'll go to you first. You covered, of course, and both of you actually covered the Commonwealth Edison trial. This is related to that trial, but not completely. So fill us in, what is Tim Mapes going to be on trial for? What's he alleged to have done?
Well, amazingly, Sean, he was given immunity to tell the truth before a grand jury during the Madigan investigation. And he was asked about 650 questions, and prosecutors don't believe that he told the truth, and they charged him with perjury and attempted obstruction of justice. The remarkable thing out of it all is that he was warned by even the chief judge before he went to the grand jury that he should tell the truth. And if he didn't tell the truth, he would be subject to potential prosecution. And the lawyers did not think that he told the truth on many things, including details about Madigan's relationship with a longtime crony, Mike McLean, the lobbyist who was with ComEd and was convicted earlier this year in the ComEd 4 case. Mike McLean, of course, is retired now, but he and three other defendants were convicted on all counts in that case. And this is an offshoot of the investigation, and prosecutors don't believe that he was shooting straight in the grand jury on a variety of things, and they're going to try to sort it out. Could take 3 weeks.
Really? So, Hannah, do we know exactly sort of how this trial might go? What kind of evidence is going to be brought forward along with the, of course, whatever testimony he gave to a grand jury? But what else might we hear about, do you think, in this trial?
I think we're going to, understand a little bit more about how Madigan's closest people operated and worked, on his behalf. Because, of course, Madigan, he did what he could, and then the people around him did what they could to kind of shield him from any direct culpability. We saw this in the ComEd trial this spring. The defense, they weren't obviously defending Madigan, and in fact, at times, they were defending. It's hard to say that Madigan was necessarily on trial there, because in some days' testimony, he looked totally innocent. Other days, he looked like he was kind of putting the squeeze on people, but the ComEd officials had tried to, not go along with the things that he said. We're going to learn a lot more about what, basically how the operation worked, how Madigan was shielded by these closest people, these loyal confidants. Of course, Tim Mapes and Mike McLean being right up there in, his most trusted circle. We know that there is going to be a bunch of wiretapped phone call recordings that we're going to hear. We've already gotten a preview of those over the last, month and a half in federal court filings, the last minute jockeying about what can and can't be played in court. from what we've seen in these filings so far. They do seem to directly contradict Mapes's, you know, overall claim to the grand jury that he didn't know that Mike McLean was working on Madigan's behalf in 2017, 18, 19. Of course, all after the time that officially Mike McLean had left his, retired from being ComEd's top outside contract lobbyist for many, many years. And we got to know McLean, you know, when he was a defendant in the ComEd trial, you know, understand how he was, you know, this word, this term double agent came up so much in both, you know, prosecutors' case that was built against him, but also, you know, defendants and, you know, witnesses used it too. They understood that McLean was as much working for ComEd, his biggest client, but always, you know, he himself would say that Madigan was my quote unquote real client. And so Mapes' claim to the grand jury that he didn't know McLean was, you know, working on Madigan's behalf, that he was given quote unquote assignments, that is pretty open and shut. But it, it's going to be very interesting to see how this case is built, because I think, again, from the outside, it seems a very open and shut case. But more importantly is what more we might learn about how Madigan's operation worked, because that previews the ultimate trial against Madigan and McLean, his co-defendant, that begins next April.
Ray, you wrote a book called The House That Madigan Built. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about Tim Mapes. I mean, how big of a role does Tim, did Tim Mapes play in that operation there?
Well, it was huge. He was the point guy for Madigan on not only how the legislature worked, because he was chief of staff, but he was House clerk, and he was also the executive director of the Democratic Party of Illinois, run by Mike Madigan. And so Madigan had entrusted him with these three major roles, all aimed and designed to make the trains run on time for the longest serving Speaker of the House of any other legislative body in American history. So we should obviously say that Mapes has denied any wrongdoing, and he's pleaded not guilty, and that's why we're going to trial. His attorneys have said that the federal authorities were attempting to squeeze him to give up information to bolster the prosecutor's case against Madigan. But his attorneys have also said in the court filings that Madigan kept things close to the vest, and that he kept private conversations with folks like McLean private, and that McLean speaks in mysterious code, et cetera. We heard in the ComEd 4 case about how McLean would refer to Madigan as himself, as we know that, as an example, we know himself will do XYZ, you know, in hopes of who knows what, camouflaging it somehow. But the reality here is that Madigan often leaned on Mapes, and Mapes had been with Madigan for years. He'd served as chief of staff for 25 years. You'd often see them whispering on the House floor. You'd see them standing together behind the speaker's podium when there were legislative leader meetings with the governor. Mapes would be there. He was always in the picture and often in Madigan's shadow or just a few feet away. If he wasn't right with him, then he would be controlling the flow of legislation on the podium. Even though he wasn't the acting speaker, he'd be telling the acting speaker what to do.
Loyalty, I guess, comes to mind here. He's been a loyal soldier to Madigan through the years, and maybe even right now going to trial over this situation. Would that be going too far to say that?
Well, I think that's what prosecutors are alleging, that this effort here by Mapes to give answers were not quite forthright because he knew more than he wanted, and he was allegedly doing more than how shall we say that he knew he didn't do or say things that he actually knew because he didn't want to incriminate Madigan. And so the prosecutors are arguing that it's more or less an attempt to shield Madigan, and that Mapes did not want to do anything but maybe protect or fall on his sword for Madigan while in the grand jury. This is one of the things that's going to be tough to prove. What did Mapes know? What does he know? What did he actually remember? And what does he not remember? Those are kind of questions that will be hard for the prosecutors to prove. So they're taking it to trial to see if anything can be shaken out here to show that Mapes knew more than he's told the grand jury.
And Hannah, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but this is very similar to what we've seen from the federal government in other public corruption trials and cases through the years as they start to build. And they oftentimes will bring charges against people with the hopes they can then get those people to testify and possibly go after bigger fish. In this case, it could be Mike Madigan. So this trial, I don't know that Madigan's case hinges on the outcome of this trial, but it could certainly help the federal government if they get a conviction and then can convince Mapes to possibly spill some secrets. Is that a way that you could see this happening?
I mean, again, I think Mapes is the most loyal soldier. I don't think that he would do anything without being like completely compelled. And, you know, before he was granted immunity, he was trying to, you know, use his Fifth Amendment privilege to not, you know, say anything, kind of forcing the issue of immunity. But yeah, I mean, there's a reason why the feds went after these players in the order that they did, and hoping to knock things loose in the process. But they're definitely dealing with a very tight-knit group of people who, just the way, especially Mike McClain, you know, the way that he spoke about Madigan, you know, there was a letter that we saw during the ComEd trial, Ray remembers, on, I think, the eve of McClain's retirement in late 2016. And it a handwritten, you know, it was this big flowery letter, and then handwritten at the bottom was like, at the end of the day, I'm standing on, you know, the bridge for you and Shirley. It's just like this language of war, and like, you know, these folks who are closest to Madigan, you know, they liked the idea that they are Madigan's loyal soldiers because, you know, he also took care of them. So yeah, I mean, it's gonna be very interesting. And seeing Tim Mapes, a person who is so fastidious, and, you know, in the three roles that Ray spoke about, you know, I think in 2018, this is after he was ousted for sexual harassment. There's this big kind of rundown of how Mapes ran the ship when he was clerk of the Illinois House in particular, and, you know, also chief of staff. And basically, you know, kind of downright mean to employees if they did not get with the program, if they weren't, you know, perceived to be working hard enough or delivering results. There was name calling and pencil throwing, I remember. And just, this is an old school style of leadership that, you know, in the year of our Lord 2023 is just not acceptable anymore. But again, these folks thought that they needed to do all that they could do just in the service of this powerful figure in Mike Madigan.
Ray, Mapes left, and he left under a bit of a scandal. And if you could fill us in on that.
What happened with the sexual harassment accusations was that a brave person named Shirley Garrett from Petersburg had worked as a clerk underling to Mapes. And at the end of the 2018 session, she held a press conference up in Chicago. And she accused him of sexual harassment, as well as a culture of sexism, harassment, and bullying, and that was in the wake of other misbehaving aides of Madigan being jettisoned from his government and political operations. And so 2008 was, or 2018 rather, was a year of reckoning for the whole Madigan operation regarding the Me Too issue. And Mapes was ousted within hours of Shirley Garrett's press conference. And so he has of course denied and disputed the allegations, and in the sexual harassment cases, well, it's not even a case actually, as charges, the allegations, but that has really hung over the Madigan operation, and really the whole Me Too issue weakened his stature as leader and was the first really major crack in his leadership. And of course, when the federal case came out in July of 2020, in which ComEd reached a deferred prosecution agreement, Madigan was named public official A, and that was the beginning of the end for Madigan as speaker.
Well, we've said that Madigan is set to go to trial next year. And before we move on from this topic, Ray, of course, we had the Commonwealth Edison, the ComEd 4, as people called them, on trial, and had the verdicts that came out in that. But since that time, a lot of people may have not been following this as closely. So has anything changed regarding the case against Madigan and what could happen as we near next year and this trial that everybody's watching out for?
Well, just to recap, he is a defendant with Mike McLean in a case that deals with two utilities, ComEd, a lot of the basic scheme that was laid out during the ComEd 4 trial, and AT&T. He allegedly got those companies to put some of his cronies on the payrolls. And he also is alleged to have worked the system so that a piece of property in Chinatown could get clearance from being state property to city property, to his hope that he could put that on his own private law practice roles so that he could represent this development. All that is a big set of allegations, but those are the topics that are coming up April 1 in the federal courthouse.
All right, well, we'll watch. And, of course, Tim Mapes, the former chief of staff to Madigan, his trial set to start next week. Hannah, I'm going to go to you because let's switch gears a bit here. Illinois and Governor J.B. Pritzker especially have been wanting to make Illinois a haven for those seeking abortion in the Midwest. And in recent weeks, he has been doubling down on this effort. So catch us up to date. What is the governor now talking about doing to make sure that women's health care in the state of Illinois is available?
Well, on Monday, the governor gathered in Chicago at UIC Hospital to kind of announce this, a few new programs targeted at expanding access, particularly because Illinois has seen its border states clamp down, all trying to put abortion restrictions in place, a Republican leadership in all five of Illinois' border states. And of course, that has meant a flood of new abortion seekers coming over state lines. And it's put a strain on providers who provide that sort of healthcare. So on Monday, the governor announced, like I said, several new programs. This was all kind of outlined in the state's budget this spring. It didn't get a ton of attention, but it's not like it was a secret that $18 million was set aside for these efforts. Number one, kind of the thing that was highlighted the most at this press conference was this new hotline that is being, you know, kind of staffed mostly by Rush University Hospital and UIC Hospital. And it's for folks who are coming to Illinois because they have very medically complicated reasons that they can't seek, you know, they need hospital-based abortion care rather than, you know, just being able to go to any old clinic. And this could happen to anyone for any reason. I mean, like scarring, possibly if you had a, you know, a previous pregnancy that was complicated. You know, if I had anemia and I was at risk for bleeding out, any number of reasons that people need this more complex hospital-based care. And, you know, there's just not a ton of hospitals that do abortion care for a variety of reasons. You know, one of the things that I think gets overlooked is just the number of hospitals in Illinois and elsewhere that are run actually by Catholic organizations. So of course they don't provide abortion care because, you know, the larger organization, you know, is, you know, opposed to that, that sort of care. So that's a hotline that, you know, really the state investment there is, I believe I was told by the governor's office, about $600,000, that was already kind of floating around, in the Department of Human Services budget. But then beyond that, there is going to be a $10 million investment within the next year or so, building out another hotline. And this is going to be a more kind of general hotline for out-of-state abortion seekers. Actually, for all abortion seekers coming to Illinois, trying to, you know, arrange appointments and set up care. And so that's going to be a major investment that's going to be headed up by the Department of Public Health. So that's right now in the beginning of stages, there's a request for proposals out. Beyond that, there's a couple other programs like expanding Medicaid to include kind of like family planning services. And then there's also on top of that $18 million from the general funds budget, there's going to be $5 million available in infrastructure money from the, you know, $45 billion rebuild Illinois capital plan from, you know, 2019. And this will be parsed out in the form of grants to abortion providers who need to do anything from, you know, upgrade their facilities just because of the crush of new patients that they're, you know, trying to see, to also security upgrades, because as Illinois becomes more of a haven for abortion seekers, it's also going to become much more of a target from the, you know, folks who are anti-abortion, because, you know, as other states are clamping down, there's not much protest to do there because they've accomplished their goals. But Illinois is definitely going to become more of a target. And so, you know, I know that both providers and public officials are, you know, worried about what that will mean if there are more protests, more conflicts, more clashes, things like that. Because of course we've seen in history, abortion providers being targeted violently, you know, sometimes even murdered because of, you know, the healthcare that they provide.
Yeah, and I know this is an issue that is near and dear to J.B. Pritzker and also to many others, but when you look at it politically, Ray, do you think that Pritzker, his standing among Democrats is elevated by the type of focus he has put on reproductive health care?
Well, right. The overturning of Roe versus Wade has been one thing that he has seized upon as an issue that women care about. And he is pro-choice anyway, so he believes that this is a thing that he should make available for women who want that type of service. He also has to be calculating that any kind of move to expand services in Illinois is something that he can tout and to push this idea that Illinois is an oasis among other states that have been trying to restrict abortion rights. And so Illinois is in the middle of a variety of states who have cut back services required all types of restrictions to really alienate or even cause people to not be able to get abortions in other states. So Illinois has thrown out more or less a welcoming mat to anybody who feels that they want that type of service and need that type of service.
And only about a minute or so left here, but are there more plans for more legislation or more things that the advocates, abortion supporters, that they want to see done here in Illinois, maybe even this fall or early next year?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things that is kind of an open secret at this point is Democrats are aiming to put on the 2024 ballot a ballot measure that would an amendment to Illinois' constitution, kind of enshrining the right to abortion. In 2019, the Reproductive Health Act went a little bit like a step below this to enshrine, abortion as a right in law, but constitutionally it would be much stronger. And we've seen, obviously success in other states like Michigan and Kansas. But also I wanted to quickly mention here, the governor last week also signed this bill that allows so-called crisis pregnancy centers to be sued under Illinois' longstanding Consumer Fraud Deceptive Businesses Practices Act. And late on Thursday, we're speaking Friday morning, but late Thursday evening, the judge, federal judge in a case that was filed by anti-abortion advocates, he issued a temporary restraining order. I'm still waiting for that to be uploaded on the federal court's website. Keep refreshing.
Well, time now for our notes from the field. Hannah, we'll stick with you.
Yeah, I wanted to highlight reporting by my colleague, Molly Parker. We are excited to have her on at Capital News Illinois recently. And she reported this week that the state's executive inspector general has been investigating dozens of state employees who it looks like committed PPP loan fraud. If we remember back to the very beginning of the pandemic, PPP was this paycheck protection program that, if you had a business, you could apply for these, turned out to be, I think, forgivable loans. But there's a lot of fraud in that program. I think 17% of the $1.2 trillion was quote unquote, potentially fraudulent. And state employees across multiple agencies seem to have gotten in on that.
That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel today included Hannah Meisel with Capital News Illinois and the Chicago Tribune's Ray Long. Charlie Wheeler will be back next week. And remember, you can find our show where you get your podcasts and at nprillinois.org, also through the NPR One app. Just look for State Week. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.